This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for listening to the Evening Edition. So if you're anything like me, you don't just love watching movies, you also love listening to two complete strangers jabber on about movies. You know, dissecting those themes, comparing and contrasting, digging deep, getting all meta, showing off their deep and profound knowledge of cinema. Which is why you need to check out the all-new At The Movies podcast with my buddy Umapagan Ambige Pagan. I really think he loves talking about movies more than he does watching them. And to listen, just log on to bfm.my/movies.
It is on. Put the volume up a bit.
So here we are, my producer and I, Calvin, and we're at the Persatuan Veteran Regiment Semboyan Diraja, Malaysia, in Taman Melawati. Thank you.
Can
wear shoes?
Don't worry. No, they're dirty here. No, you have to wash
it. You
sure? Only
in
that room, only.
Okay. And we're here to speak to our colleague, Keith Kams. You know, he's the guy you hear reading the news every day on BFM. Well, we're here to speak to his father, Lieutenant Colonel Datuk Kam Yun Sang.
Siapa Calvin?
That's Calvin.
Hi. How are you?
I'm Uma, uncle.
Hi.
Uma.
Uma.
Nice to meet
Uma,
you.
Okay.
That's right.
So we listen
to
radio.
Uma, Ambiya Pagan
or something like that.
Ambiya Pagan.
Oh.
Very long.
Okay. Go in there, go to take out shoes.
Sure, no problem.
Otherwise, Kak Inti will get angry, my granddaughters will get upset.
This is the Evening Edition, and I'm Umapagan Ampike Pagan. The Lunar New Year is but 3 days away, and I thought that this would be as good a time as any to roll out something we've been working on and compiling for a long time now. The oral histories of everyday Malaysians is something that I have always felt to be quite fascinating. You know, those stories from our past that often get lost, forgotten, if for nothing else, simply because we do little to record them. Intimate stories, personal stories, the stories that make us who we are.
My name is Kam Yun Sang, and I hail from this remote village called Pulai, Pulu Kelantan, and subsequently I migrated to Kampung Pulai Baru in Kuala Terengganu.
So we sit down inside Colonel Kam's office, our shoes are off, our microphone's on, and the Colonel starts to tell us about his hometown in Goa Musang, a village deep in the jungle called Pulai. I'm going to keep quiet now and let Colonel Kam do all the work.
So, with all these documentary records, looking at the grave sites, and one interesting aspect, for example, is there is a Chinese temple there, known to be one of the oldest. In fact, annually when they celebrated the birthday of the Goddess of Mercy, mm-hmm. you have people
Kuan Yin,
from
right?
Kuan Yin, yeah. You have people from as far as Singapore and Johor congregating in this village called Pulai, right, celebrating that birthday. And one day, when they turn over the joystick urn, tempat yang dia bakar joystick tu, they look at the date that was stamped in this tin or aluminium container, and it was the Ming Dynasty.
Wow.
So things like that. And of course, we say when this magazine, what is this magazine? iAsia, is it? Focus on what matters. When this magazine conducted their study, right, concluded that this is more than 600 years old. Of course, this also was evident from the graves of our ancestors. You see?
So, Uncle, that means, so the Pulai Kam clan has gone far and wide, like you said, Singapore, they're now all over.
They are now all over. And
From BFM to Singapore.
Definitely from BFM to Singapore. You know, they are now probably all over the world. You know? I know that they are in Australia, you know, and all that. Now, it's also interesting. You would have thought that a lot of these Chinese clans, when they migrated, when they came to this beautiful land, you know, in the 1400, 1500, a lot of them were known to be, first of all, to be traders. Betul tak? And they would congregate in the West Coast.
Yeah, Temasek and Melaka.
That's right. You know, later on Selangor, you know. Then when you find tin, they specifically came to do tin mining. That would be much, much later, in the 1800s. So the theory was that, some said we came to do gold mining in Ulu Kelantan because they discovered gold later. I still remember that in our family, my mother had kept nuggets, you know. But I tell you how interesting it is where they all came from. Because in the 1400s or 1500s, when this Chinese Hakka clan, when they came to Kelantan, it would have been ridiculous if they came with the specific mind to do mining. Do that. You know, in the 1500s, mana ada geologists, mana ada remote sensing for them to know where the gold is, you see? So I would rather believe that we were farmers, and I will tell you why, you see? Because during those days, you're talking about 1400, you know, when they came from the southern part of China, from Guangdong, they would have come with as little, you know, we said sehelai sepinggan, no, you know, a piece of cloth on his back, you know, and a roll-up piece of bundle of cloth with no women folks. You understand? That's why my great-great-great-great-great-grandmother was a local, was a Kelantanis Patanian. They call her Kelantanis Patani tu orang Siam lah. To dia. You see? They would come only the males, you see? And they are supposed to make gold in this foreign land. Lepas tu...
Go home and get married.
Bring the other folks, you see? We believe that when they came, they saw the beautiful beaches of Kelantan. They might even have seen Pantai Jaya Bulan, PCB,
which used to be called Pantai Cinta Berahi.
Yeah,
right?
You're right. Then they saw. I used to cycle there when I was in school, and then they saw the river mouth, huge Kelantan River that time lah. Now all silted up, So they would have gone upstream in their junks, whatever craft they have, you know. They would have seen that the riverbank, kiri kanan, are all now occupied by the natives, by the locals, you know. They would have kept going up the Kota Baru, the river mouth. They would have passed Parang Bank, you know, going up. They would gone all the way up to Dabung.
Yeah.
Into the big estuaries, you know, Sungai Galas and all that. And finally landed in this place, which was called Pulai. For whatever reason, they call Pulai, maybe because of the big Pulai trees. And they would have brought with them biji-biji seeds, you know, for the plants, you know, padi, whatever they have. And they found the valley there so fertile. And they started doing what they have been doing in their kampung in China.
Why do you suppose they left China? Was it purely for economic reasons?
Quite definitely. You see, because the Hakka clan, unlike the Hokkien or the Cantonese or the Hainanese, Hakka ni, they do not have a province. Hakka means kek, no? Kek means guest. They are the guests of the provinces. No, they are the people who will go out.
Wanderers, nomads.
For job.
Right.
You know, I don't like to call them mercenaries lah. But you offer them the best job, they'll take it up, you see? And their lady folks are known to be the toughest, see, because they are left behind to fend for themselves, to look after the family, to bring up the family. The male will go out, you see. They're supposed to be the workers, the warriors. They'll go. You offer them, they'll go. And those were the brave Hakka, you see. So I like to think of my ancestors as Bindus, who will strive, you know, for their betterment and go out to these faraway places, you know, for adventures. And then they end up there. And in the process of their agricultural activities, do cangkul sini, tebang sini, you know, hold and behold, they found gold, you see. And that is why Ulu Kelantan, Gua Musang, has been known to have rich deposits of gold.
Right.
You know?
I'm speaking today to Lieutenant Colonel Datuk Kam Yun Sang on this, our brand new show on the Evening Edition that seeks to chronicle the oral histories of Malaysians from all walks. After this, the good Colonel tells us about how he ended up serving in the armed forces. You're listening to Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Hello and welcome back to Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, the show in which we chronicle and catalogue the rich and storied lives of our fellow Malaysians. I'm speaking today to Lieutenant Colonel Datuk Kam Yun Sang.
So, actually, just talk about you for a second, Uncle. How did you end up in the military?
Oh, that one is a long story, lah. You know,
I'm sure part of it had to do with the Hakka warrior in your genes.
I like to think so. I suppose especially my personal case, because it would be quite unique or unusual. Because first of all, ever since those old days where you have the history of China, where they are forever fighting. If they don't fight against one another, or against a warlord from one province to another, they have to fight against the invaders, you know, etc. Hence, their Great Wall of China to protect themselves, you know. Sometimes, because of conscription, each family has to contribute one son to join the armed forces for the Emperor of China and all that. So that spirit has always been there. And it's because the same thing also, especially Hakka family, they always felt that, you know, if you're a son, you really don't go and join the army. You should stay back and, you know,
earn a living.
Earn a living, look after the family and all that. So in my personal case, it was unusual because I was the only son in the family. And furthermore, I was also the eldest. And yet, I decided to join for many good reasons. You see, Pulai was a really isolated place, really isolated. If a child is born, the parents wouldn't even have the opportunity to go and report because the nearest police station probably is in Kuala Krai, which is about 7 days away. Dulu mana ada jalan kan? 7 days away by foot and by rakit. Rakit is what? Raft.
Raft.
So they don't normally take trouble to go and report and all that. And they would, you ask any Kelantanese from the kampung, they'll say the same. They would plant a coconut tree, you see. And then you ask, how old is your son? They'll say, let me have a look at the tree, you know. You know, things like that. So it was an isolated village, of this Hakka settlement. Came 1948, to be precise, it was June 1948. When the communists started their nonsense. And the first emergency was declared. Our village was...
don't worry, Uncle.
You got to answer this once again.
Sure, don't worry.
So we paused for a little while here while Uncle Kam took a phone call. He was, of course, attending to his duties as advisor to the Persatuan Veteran Regiment Semboyan Diraja Malaysia. But back to our conversation.
You're telling us about the insurgency.
Gua Musang was notorious in the history of the emergency because, if I'm not mistaken, it was the only town, you know, in the whole country, that was really occupied by the communists for a few days, and they managed to fly their Bintang Tiga flag, you know, to indicate that they have so-called liberated the area, you see. That was how bad it was. During those period, Pulai, which is this isolated Chinese settlement, was in the thick of all that. You see, our people were simple farmers, simple villagers, striving to earn a decent living. You know, farmers, if their paddy didn't grow properly that 1 year, they will not get proper food, misalnya. You know, and came these people, they call themselves the liberator, but we know them for what they were. They were just called communist terrorists, or the cities, you see. They come to the village, you know, they would demand whatever they want. You don't give them, your life is threatened. My own family had a lot of unpleasant experiences. I could have ended up in the jungle, because when they come to the house, they ask my father, you either supply this. If you don't, your son will help us to carry this barang. And I was hardly 8, 9, 10 years old. You see? And I would have been their porters, you see? If you buy this barang for them, you are going to get caught one day by the police, by our very efficient special branch, and you end up in the lockup. So can you imagine these poor villagers who did not know the difference between one ideology to the next ideology? What is communism to them? All they're interested is the river is flowing and the canal where the water is going to irrigate their paddy field are the air. So we were literally what was best described by some writers as hidup antara dua gergasi. Okay. And my uncle at the time was the Tuk Pungulu, the headman of the village. And obviously, he was not very supportive of what these people were doing. One evening, he decided to answer the call of nature. Oh, in those days, in the kampung houses, the toilet is about 100 meters away, you see? In a little shed dekat near the sawah, you know. This poor man went out and didn't come back. So when they conducted a search, you know, done by the nearest infantry or Malay battalion, you know, we had soldiers then, you see. So when they went down search for him, they found him tied to a tree, you know. With a lot of bullet holes, you know. And his eyes were gouged out. That was how they killed my uncle.
This is Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this podcast. Well, you must be. You've made it this far. Anyway, when you're done listening to this one, don't forget to check out At the Movies with my buddy Umapagan Ampike Pagan. It'll satisfy all your movie podcast cravings, but only after you're done listening to this one. Remember, it's bfm.my/movies.
This is Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, and I'm Umapagan Ampike Pagan, our brand new show that seeks to chronicle and catalogue the rich and storied lives of our fellow Malaysians. I'm speaking today to Lieutenant Colonel Datuk Kam Yun Sang, who was telling us about the trauma his family endured at the hands of the communist terrorists and how that would inspire him to join the armed forces.
And I suppose that and your family experiences were motivation for you to join the military, to join the army.
I mean that definitely was a turning moment in the impressionist life of a young boy from the kampung, you know. And I have always said to people, to my friends in the army, that I don't know about your other villages or kampung, but from this little kampung called Pulai, the number of Chinese youths who ended up in the security forces were quite disproportionate. You know, I have got 7, 8, 9 cousins from my own family alone. First, they volunteered to join the jungle squads. The Jungle Squads were the pre-organizations before our police field force, or what we have now, the Pasukan Gerakan Am, you know. They serve in the police force. I've got a couple of cousins who serve in the military. In fact, even now, I still have got my first cousin still serving in the police force. It was quite natural for us. It became so bad that in 1948 was the first emergency. The government that time under the British, under General Templar, when he became the British High Commissioner after the ambush and the murder of Sir Henry Gurney on his way to Fraser's Hill, General Templar identified that one of the ways to break the backbone of this militant communist terrorism was to discourage or separate their support. You know, like he said, if you take away the water, the fish will not survive, you see. So a lot of these villagers out in the outskirts, in all these remote areas, no, kawasan yang terpencil, no? When they come to you, you've got to support them. You know, you've got no choice. So if you take the villagers away, you should be able to slowly get rid of these terrorists. Eh? And that's what he did. That's where the Chinese new villages began to be created. So that was in 1950-51. I was hardly 10, 11, 12 years old at the time. Suddenly, you find a lot of army trucks turn up in the village, in the school Padang, in front of the temple. You get this information department, Land Rover, loudspeakers. No notice. Everybody from the outskirts come in. You are going to move now immediately. And you can only carry what your hands can carry. And you're loaded up into this truck from Pulai, transported to Guamusang by train, you know, to Kota Baru. You see the geographical implication. That means you leave your house, you leave your ternakan, you know, your ayam itik. I have to leave my favorite water buffalo behind. Yeah. You know, this sort of impression I could never forget.
How old were you when that happened?
About 10 years old, you know. They would transport us by army trucks to Guamusang Railway Station. From there, loaded up into the cowboy train, right, to Kota Baru. Actually, not exactly Kota Baru, actually, their train station is in Balekbang, across the river, you see. We were interned in the Pengkalan Cipa prison, you know, the compound. I still remember eating this nasi kawa, you know, from the big pot, you know, kick in the whole village, what? And then transport by truck to Batu Rakit, Terengganu, to a place called Kampung Pulai Baru, Chinese New Village. That was one of the Chinese New Villages, how they separated the water, you know, so that the fish will die, you see. And in fact, that was one of the schemes that really broke the back of the militant communism in this country. Which is later on going to be called, known as the Briggs Plan, because it was really the brainchild of General Harold Briggs, you see, under General Templar. So, cut a long story short, went to school. That also very interesting. Went to school, no birth certificate. So, no solution. Father got to Sumpah, you see. Got to senior Cambridge. I could have done many things because at that time to get a grade one in senior Cambridge in 58-59, itu sudah gagah. It's very good already, is it? You know, but applied to join the army. To my surprise, it was accepted. Next thing I knew, I was in Port Dickson. That's how it started.
After this, to happier times, I ask Colonel Kham to tell us the story of how he met his wife. You're listening to Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony.
BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, and I'm Umapagan Ampakepagan. I'm speaking today to Lieutenant Colonel Datuk Kam Yun Sang, who also happens to be the father of Keith Kam, you know, the chap whose voice you hear reading the news every day on BFM. Colonel Kam was just about to tell me the story of how he met his wife.
I was wondering if you could tell me how you met Auntie. How did you meet your wife?
Oh, that's very interesting. She should be here, you know. So after my 2 year in the Maktab Tentera Diraja, or earlier part it was called the Maktab Tentera Persekutuan or the FMC, Federation Military College, sudah commissioned as a second lieutenant, you know, pegawai already kan. So my first unit was a signal regiment, looking after the communications requirement in the Ministry of Defense, you know, Jalan Parang Tembak, you know, or Rifle Range Road that time, or Rifle Range Road. Auntie Connie was working as a telephonist, you know, in the in his big ministry, you see. And I was responsible for many of these communications requirements. So one day, I saw these beautiful girls, and that's how it started. You know, those days, pay was not very high, but like they say, you know, I remember one of my old bosses who said to me, if you want to live a life of luxury, don't join the army, or don't join the armed forces. Because the army pays you enough for you to serve your country. I should always remember that. Of course, we have to make do with what we have. But the marriage allowance was very good. Because that was a good incentive to get married.
So, Uncle, what was it like celebrating something like Chinese New Year on the road? You moved around a lot, right? Sungai Besi, Keith was saying that you were also in Washington for a while, and then you were in Sungai Petani. Yeah. What was that like, moving around the country, moving around the world, celebrating festivals with what little family you have wherever you go?
See, that is what is called, you know, you just don't call the lady your wife, you see? You call her your life partner, because that is what it is. Especially as a soldier. Oh, I enjoyed my life very, very much. You know, in fact, that's why I feel doubly guilty, you know, leaving her to bring up the boys, you know, why I am sort of scream shanking around the countryside, you know. That's a nice word, huh?
It's a good word.
You know, because when it comes to festivities like that, you know, if you are out, your family or yourself would be the last thing you think of. But more of your soldiers who are deployed in the front line, you see, along the borders and all that. The family would be in houses, in quarters, you know. Right? But think of the soldiers who are deployed, you see. I still remember one of those occasions that I cherish very much was to visit the soldiers out in the bush during all this Hari Raya, whether it's Chinese New Year, or Hari Raya, Aidil Fitri. The family back home, like mine, you talk about auntie, can't leave behind the kids and all that. They'll just have to make do. Maybe you can make do with a few phone calls. You know, that would be about it. That is why in retirement, when you have this sort of occasion, first of all, it is very traditional. Chinese New Year especially is nothing very much, nothing religious really. You know, it's traditional. My brother-in-law, I think, is outside, you know. He's Sukumara Naya. He's an ex-police special branch officer. So he, you know, we all joined in. You know, after all, it's supposed to be a family reunion. In fact, this Sunday night, I mean, that's it, you see. If you're in the service, you're in the army, the few occasions that you can be with your family, you're very thankful. So give a thought to the servicemen, the policemen, and all those additional services who are deployed during festivities like that. Give them a thought. I joined the army in early 1960 and served for about 24 years and took early retirement. I have retired as a lieutenant colonel in 1983. Seems a long time ago. I've also tried to contribute by being active various associations that look after the welfare of our veterans or ex-servicemen, you know, their family. I wanted to contribute or give something back to this organization called the Malaysian Armed Forces or the Malaysian Army in particular, which has been so much part of my life, and trying to give something back to people who had meant so much to me.
That was Lieutenant Colonel Datuk Kam Yun Sang. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast, as always, on bfm.my. This has been Oral Histories on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.